Hello there, Westgate 6000. Jacob Burton here from StellaCulinary.com. And sorry it took me so long to get to your questions that you asked on SES 22, the audio podcast for Let's Talk Sourdough. So I'm just going to do an audio response here. I hope you don't mind, but you covered a lot of information in your question. So I want to just make sure that I'm reading through it all and making sure that I'm answering every point that you bring up. That way I can most fully answer your question. So here we go. Westgate, you say, Jacob, I am speechless at the quality. Oh, no, that's just compliments. I'm not going to read those. But thank you. I appreciate that you're enjoying the site. Second day so far. I'm finishing up. Okay. I got into sourdough bread, making sure health reasons. Commercial yeast is simply bad. I got into sourdough bread making due to health reasons. Commercial yeast is simply bad. But I also want to make 100% whole grains for the same health reasons. I don't understand the subject fully, but based on what I've heard, any flour which is not 100% whole, for example, bread flour, has beneficial things removed from it and removed in a bad way with solvents or whatever. I have no clue, just having the vague. Okay, so let me stop you there. So definitely whole wheat flour will have more minerals, and also known as ash content. Also, it will have more fiber. I'm not a dietitian, but the general consensus is that, you know, your body needs vitamins and minerals to survive. There is more minerals in whole wheat flour than there is in, bread flour or just all-purpose flour. And then also, too, there's going to be more fiber. And I've heard people argue that, you don't need a bunch of fiber in your diet, but the general consensus seems to be, without, you know, getting into a scientific debate over it, that that fiber tends to be good for your digestion, and also slows down the digestion of fats and things like that, so it keeps you fuller longer. So there's certain benefits that are given for fiber. And so, yes, in that context, whole wheat flour contains more minerals and more fibers and more vitamins than a bread flour. Now, there are some bread flours, or there are some flours, mainly cake and pastry flours, to weaken their gluten structure that are chemically treated. But these, but people get scared when you talk about chemicals, and you really have to look at, what really is it. I mean, baking soda is a chemical. Technically, salt is a chemical, technically. So you kind of have to look past that and see, is it really good or bad for me? But for the most part, the bread flours that I use, they're just sifted. So, and that's, any high quality flour is going to be sifted. So when I get my white bread flour, what that means is just the bran has been sifted out of that flour. So it doesn't contain as many minerals and nutrients and as much fiber as the whole wheat flour would, but it's not like they're actually going through some scary chemical process to remove that bran. And then, hence the first question, as you say, could you please give me some references to health-related info on flours? It could be that I am misunderstood. Okay, so I think we kind of answered that. But whole wheat flours are good for you, The second question is about 100% whole wheat starters and breads. You mention it in a few places in podcasts and in videos, but you mostly focus up to 20% whole wheat content for optimum results. Okay, so the reason why I do that is, the recipes that I have on the website now, see, I'm still trying to preach the gospel of sourdough bread and not make them this awful, scary thing that people never want to attempt. I like whole wheat flour even in my white formulations of sourdough bread, because I think it adds a better complexity of flavor. You get more complexity from the acidic and lactic acid production produced by the lactic acid bacteria. So it really has a beneficial role in your sourdough bread formulations. However, as discussed in previous bread podcast episodes, the microscopic jagged edges of wheat bran will cut your gluten strands, thus shortening them, thus making your bread not rise as much and have as much oven spring and make it a denser loaf. So I've found that through testing that even if you're not super familiar with the bread shaping, forming, kneading techniques and sourdough, you can still usually get away with adding up to about 20 to 30% whole wheat flour to your sourdough formulation, and it's not really going to have a lot of effect on your density. So I didn't want people to go through this whole process and then, you know, make their first sourdough bread recipe, you know, something that has a lot of whole wheat flour in it, because then it's going to come out dense and they're going to be bummed out and it might discourage them from, you know, trying sourdough bread recipes in the future. So above 20% and sometimes above 30%, or I should say sometimes above 20%, but definitely above 30%, you're going to start noticing that your whole wheat loaves become more dense. And that's just the nature of the beast when making you know, breads that contain a lot of whole wheat. So, and to me, I don't necessarily mind this density. We just get so used to having these really light and fluffy breads in our lives that you know, when you bite into a dense loaf of whole wheat, you're like, oh, that's so dense and chewy and whatever. But that's whole wheat bread. That's a true artisan whole wheat bread. But there's still ways around this. And then the best the best success I've had with 100% whole wheat is I do a multi-stage sifting process. And what I do is I will take my whole wheat flour, and I will first sift it through a strainer, like a wire mesh strainer that's not super fine. So you have a chinois, like what I use for straining my stalks on the second time around. So that's a fine particulate strainer. So first, I will sift through, you know, a coarse strainer that you just find, like any like wire mesh strainer, like at a, you know, hardware store or the cooking section at Rayleigh's or something, or a supermarket. So you sift through that flour, and most of the flour is going to pass through this first sifting. And what you'll notice is what doesn't pass through is the real hard pieces of bran that are like large chunks of the bran from the milling process of the wheat. So I'll take those large chunks and I'll set them aside in a small airtight container, and we'll revisit those later. Then I'll take the sifted flour, and now I will sift it through a chinois or a very fine mesh strainer, and I'll sift it through a couple of times. And I'm not going to lie to you, this step is a pain. It takes a little while to sift all this stuff through. You just got to kind of shake and tap, shake and tap, shake and tap. And then whatever doesn't pass through, you're going to notice it's going to be obviously a lot darker than the stuff that did pass through. Whatever doesn't pass through, you're going to set that aside, and then you're going to go back and you're going to re-sift again through the chinois, try and get more of that, you know, that dark bran out, and then, you know, set that aside. And then you're going to take the stuff that was sifted out that you set aside, and you're just going to sift it one more time and see if you can really just kind of isolate those larger particles of the wheat bran. Now you're going to set that aside, and now you're going to have your sifted whole wheat flour that went through the whole sifting process, just sitting there, and it'll kind of look like white bread flour, but it'll be a little bit of a flex of the whole wheat in there, so it won't look like totally refined. So what I will do is I will then take the weight of my of the secondary sift. So okay, so first we had the bran. Okay, that the large chunks. Then we had the stuff that wouldn't pass through the chinois. So we're just gonna call this our medium wheat, okay, for lack of a better term. And then our end product of the flour that was fully sifted, we'll just call it our fully sifted flour. So I'm gonna take the medium wheat that we had that was mostly the bran that we sifted out. I'm going to weigh that, and I'm going to add the same amount of weight by water, and now that's going to turn into my pre-ferment, and I'm going to inoculate that pre-ferment with a very small amount of sourdough starter. And the reason why I want to do a small amount is because this 100% hydration poolish is going to slowly ferment over the course of 12 hours, so I usually just leave it overnight. And as it ferments, those tough pieces of wheat bran that normally cut my gluten strands are going to start to hydrate, and also the lactic acid bacteria and the yeast in my starter are going to start to break them down for food. So it's going to start eating them, which will soften them, and it still won't completely solve the issue of them cutting through the gluten strands of my bread, but it will definitely help that issue a lot. Okay, so I'm going to use that as my pre-ferment. Then the next day, I'm going to mix this pre-ferment, the sourdough pre-ferment, with my fully sifted flour, and then add additional water and salt to bring it to whatever hydration rate I want. So, and usually for whole wheat breads, I'm doing about a 70 to 75% hydration rate, because whole wheat flour, because it contains more bran and it contains more protein in the form of gluten, it can actually absorb more water. And so it's nice to have a 70 to 75% hydration rate. Go ahead and check out my video on the baker's percentage if you're unclear with this. So now I have it all combined into one dough, and now I'm just going to go through the regular fermentation process where I do the bulk fermentation, you know, let it rise to about, you know, 1.5 to 2 size over the course of, you know, 4 to 5 hours, gently degas it, form it into my individual loaves, and then proof. Now, before I actually proof those, so I take my bulk fermented dough, I divide in my loaves, I form, and I'm usually doing like boules with this, you know, so round pieces of dough. What I will do is I will brush the surface of my formed dough before it proofs with a little bit of water. And then remember that really those large chunks of bran that we pulled out in the initial stage of sifting, our very first sift. Well, I'll now take my slightly wetted surface of my formed loaf and I will roll it in that cracked wheat bran. And what that's going to do is that's going to keep them on the outside of my loaf, which they'll turn into these awesome, beautiful, crunchy, nutty bits that'll give my loaf some awesome texture. But because they're not on the interior of my loaf, I don't have to worry about them cutting my gluten strands and deflating my dough. So that's kind of my approach for that. And then once I coat in the cracked wheat bran, I allow the boules to proof, and then I bake as usual. And again, so this isn't going to come out with the light, fluffy density of, you know, 100% white bread flour loaf. But it comes out pretty damn good, especially for a 100% whole wheat loaf. And the flavor on it is absolutely awesome. Okay? So I hope that answered your question there. And then you say, Jacob, I hope you don't mind. One more question. Let's see if we can... I use 100% whole wheat bread for a while. It wasn't bad at all, relatively, but I want to take it to the next level and finally understand what I was doing here. Here's what I did. Okay, so basically what you're outlining in this comment, which if other people are following along, it's comment number 43 in our sourdough discussion thread found on stellacolonial.com/SES22. And you're basically just talking about doing a multi-day build, which is fine. That's just one approach. But basically, you're doing the same thing. So a sourdough starter and by itself, since you're feeding it and refreshing it and feeding it and refreshing it, is almost like a multi-day build in and of itself. But then what you're doing with the multi-day build here, or the multi-hour build where you're starting with a small amount of flour and water and some leavening agent, and then kind of building that out by adding more flour and water, that's just another method for delaying fermentation. And when you delay fermentation, you get a more complex flavor up until a certain point to when you create too much acidic acid, and that starts affecting the gluten structure, starts weakening your gluten strands, and it deflates your dough. So that's my opinion on that. It's just another method for delaying fermentation. And you say, I'm curious where in the whole picture this technique falls. Yeah, so it's a delayed fermentation technique. Also, the amount seems to be too low for pre-ferment. Yeah, so what you're doing is you're basically, so it's technically a pre-ferment because you have that small amount of flour and water that you're inoculating with yeast, and then you're just kind of building that pre-ferment over time by adding more flour and water to it. So it's technically a pre-ferment, and you're just delaying the eventual final fermentation by adding fresh flour and water as you build the dough to the amount that you want to bake your batch of bread. And you say, yeah, sometimes it comes out pretty good, sometimes too dense, even though I follow the exact formula. I don't know what it depends on. Could be that my starter isn't strong. Yeah, so with that, the inconsistency, as far as like density, usually issues that happen with density is if you, especially with whole wheat, if you overwork your dough, then you're basically smashing those wheat brands into your gluten structure, and cutting the gluten structure, making the dough more dense. Also, too, if you delay fermentation too much, the longer it takes for sourdough to ferment, then the more acidic acid will build up. And so that'll give you like that really sour flavor. And you're also going to have more acidic acid build up naturally based upon the fact that you're feeding it whole wheat, because the lactic acid bacteria that produces acidic acid prefers to eat the bran of whole wheat and use that as their food to metabolize acidic acid as a byproduct. And so that will give you that sour flavor, which you want up to a certain point. And some people like really sour flavored sourdoughs. But once you have too much acid buildup, then that will weaken the gluten structure of your dough. And it will cause it to collapse and not spring properly, which will give you the eventual outcome of the loaf being too dense. So this can also happen too if like you're delaying fermentation in the fridge over time. Again, so as you draw out that fermentation, you're building complexity of flavor, you're building sourness, but you're flirting with getting too much acid buildup in your dough, which is going to cause you to have a more dense loaf. And then your final question, you said, Jacob, I observe some people baking cookies and pies on dough, which I call underdeveloped starter, either using a sort of starter 1 or 2 or 3 days till fully mature. Okay, so you're talking about using sourdough starters in cookies and pie dough, but usually cookies and pie doughs are quick breads. So they're leavened with baking soda and baking powder and using some sort of acid. So the baking soda or the sodium bicarbonate, which is alkaline, it reacts with some sort of acid in baking powder itself. The baking soda is mixed with an acid that's actually dissolved and activated with heat. So that's why you'll use the baking soda. And that reaction causes CO2 formation, which is what allows the cookies to rise or the pie crust to rise. But usually the pie crust doesn't even have baking soda or baking powder in it. It has just butter, and that butter is folded in chunks. And then when the pie crust is baked, it basically that butter melts and some steam is released from that butter, and it creates layers within that pie dough. So you almost never will see cookies and pie crusts leavened with yeast or sourdough starter, because it's just not really it's not technically correct in that format. Then you say, what's your take on this matter? Is there some simple, clear framework for the kind of use available? Yeah, so I mean, basically I wouldn't use... When making my cookies and pie crust, I'm not using yeast. I'm using, if I need some form of leavening, I'm using baking soda or baking powder or a combination thereof. Or in the sense of a traditional pie crust, I'm just basically layering in, or what we call laminating in, the butter into my pie crust dough, and then letting it bake. And as that butter melts, it gives me that nice flaky pie crust. Also, P.S., many use soda and baking powder too. Is there anything with soda and baking powder you wouldn't be able to achieve with a partially fermented flour and water? So sometimes too, why people will put baking soda or baking powder into cookies and bread formulations, even when like you don't necessarily need them, is it raises the pH of an item, and browning will happen at a more rapid pace at a higher pH. So sometimes you'll see people making like a chip or maybe a cookie that already has another form of leavening in it, but they'll still add a little bit of extra baking soda. And that's specifically to raise the alkalinity of the dough, which allows the dough to brown more easily. So I hope that answered all of your questions. If it didn't, please feel free, obviously, to post a comment here in this thread, or you can always go and create a new forum topic. So that should do it for now. Let me know if you have any more questions, and welcome to Stella Culinary Community. I know you're kind of a bit of a new user. You've been around for a couple of weeks now. So I happy to have a new breadhead on the forums and interacting with you, and let us know if there's anything else we can do for you. Good luck with your bread.